I think one of the best ways to understand the seven habits, in fact, to understand any subject, is to study its opposite. So let me just briefly go through the seven habits of highly ineffective people, and then I'll revisit and restate the seven habits of effective people, and I'll attempt to use the original language, but to teach it in a new way. The first habit of ineffective people is that they don't take responsibility for their own life. They are victimized. They feel like they're under the control of other forces. They're under the control of environmental forces, or other people are doing them in. People are unkind to them. Bosses are dead-ending their careers. Teenage children may be killing the spirit in their home life. Their spouse may be very oppressive and very inconsiderate. Their parents may have abused them on a consistent basis, and they grew up with what is called a shame-based identity out of a dysfunctional family. All of these things could have happened to these individuals, and so they have ample justification and reason to essentially say, I am what other people have made of me. I am what my past has made of me. I am what is happening to me all around today, and not to take responsibility. And people who blame are usually into love-hate relationships with their loved ones. They're filled usually with a lot of anger and even resentment toward sometimes their parents or other people in the past who have perhaps treated them unfairly, unjustly. They're often angry about what's happening out there in the environment, what the government is doing, what their boss is doing, what their organization that they are doing their work in is doing to them. Consequently, all they're doing is essentially living out the agendas that has been given to them before by other people, and they're filled with this state of what I call disempowering self and empowering the forces outside themselves, or even the genetic and psychic forces within themselves. They're empowering them to continue to control their lives. And I do not want to judge the depth and the extent of the injuries that they may have received or are now being oppressed by. All I am saying is, between what happens to us and our response to it is our freedom to choose our response. And that is the key element of the first habit. It's being alive. It's the habit of choosing your response, the habit of awareness that I am a separate person from all that has happened to me, including all of my feelings, my moods, my genetic makeup, and so forth. Now, people who are ineffective usually do not practice habit two, or if they do it very superficially. Habit two, begin with the end in mind. Instead, these people begin with no end in mind. They just kind of wander aimlessly. If they set goals, that is because of some temporary environmental pressure upon them to come up with New Year's resolutions or some new goals, but they're not that committed. They have no sense of what their life is about, no sense of personal meaning. There's no sense of their own identity. Consequently, they do not begin with the end in mind. They do not envision the future with the sense that I can influence it, that I am the creative force of my own life. Instead, they think in terms of the reasons why they cannot accomplish things. They hope a lot. They dream a lot. But there's no internal sense of power that I can literally make those things happen if I make my mind up. Habit three, to put first things first. Ineffective people put second things first. They don't put first things first. They might even know what the first things are, but because they're so victimized by circumstances and other people and their past, they are precluded from keeping those first things first. And they end up, in a sense, bogged down in the thick of thin things. And Goethe's statement, things which matter most must never be at the mercy of things which matter least, applies beautifully to them, and they don't know any way out because they are busy, they are into a state of crisis management, they are inundated with all that is happening to them out there, and the only respite that they seek and feel is some break with it. Now, the net effect of these first three habits is that they create an inward lack of identity, lack of personal security. and a sense that the only worth that lies in them comes from other people's opinions of them. It's what I call a scarcity mentality. They see life through a filter or through a lens that says there's only so much. So if they see someone else getting more than they, even if it's a loved one, they might inwardly feel resentment. Outwardly, they might say, I'm happy for you, but inwardly, they are eating their hearts out, and they know it. And they can even secretly delight in the misfortunes of other people. Their security comes too much from the forces outside themselves and not from their own internal sense of worth and integrity. Habit one, in a sense, to be proactive, means that we're alive, that we are living our own lives. We're choosing our own response. The second habit, to begin with the end in mind, is in a sense the test of our meaning. What is our life about? What is our identity? What are we about in life? The third habit is the test of our integrity, our discipline, and our commitment to live by those things. That's the habit of having our lives integrated. We walk our talk. The main thing is to keep the main thing, the main thing. That is a real challenge and a true test of our integrity, of our maturity. Now, the ironic thing is, out of all of this interior work comes an internal power and a maturity that releases us from the terrifying sense of having our security come from the outside. Our security, the locus of it, shifts to the inside. Can you imagine the sense of emancipation, of true liberation, when a person senses that my security, my sense of worth, my identity lies inside me? It lies in things over which I have influence and control, and not in someone's opinion of me, not in the public opinion marketplace, not in how I stack up against other people. They don't come out of what Abraham Maslow called a deficiency state of motivation. Instead, they are in a growth state. They are in a becoming state. They're happy for the successes of others, and they can genuinely sorrow with their misfortunes. They don't secretly harbor hopes to hear about other people's misfortunes. They rejoice in the good things, and they look for the good things, not for the bad. Now, out of that comes the other habits, 4, 5, and 6. They're the habits of our relationships with other people. So habit 4, to think win-win, is just the natural fruit of habits 1, 2, and 3, but in itself is the root to even more fruit in our relationships with others. It'll help produce new things, bonding experiences, the power to influence others to do their own interior work. Then we could call the opposite of that to think win-lose, or to think lose-win, which is a kind of martyrdom step on me again. Everyone else does. I'm no good. See, those attitudes, those approaches are the habits of ineffective people. Probably the more common one, though, is the win-lose, or at least the win. I don't care about whether you win or lose. All I know is I want to win. If there is any contest of wills involved, and if I have a deeply embedded scarcity mentality where I see life as a big contest, as a zero-sum game, as one large piece of pie, and if you get a hunk of it, that means I have less, then I'll tend to go for win-lose. I want my way. Then I get my jollies. I get my psychological satisfactions having those kinds of controls on your life. But there's no bonding that takes place. There's nothing that is created that is new that strengthens us both. And then it develops a kind of defensive mentality and an adversarial feeling, even inside marriages, even inside families, and very clearly and obviously inside many, many organizations. And it undermines the emotional bank account, the trust. And when that is shot, then communication is shot, because communication is primarily a function of trust, not of technique. Now, habit 5 we call seek first to understand, then to be understood. Ineffective people do the very opposite. They really do. They want to be understood. They're so filled with how right they are or what their desires are that they see the whole life, in a sense, through that autobiographical stance. In other words, it's their story, their value system, their background, their views, their evaluation. That's what guides their decisions. That's what guides their judgments. And for them to really listen empathically, that is within the frame of mind and heart of another person, takes this enormous internal security and this sense of my own worth so that I can afford to leave myself. See, that's why ineffective people cannot afford to leave themselves. They might try to practice this on superficial issues. They might succeed to some degree, but you take the key issues of their life, what we might call the jugular issues, where they have invested an enormous amount of emotional energy. You take those issues, particularly with the dearest people of their life, and that will be their test. And it will be their undoing as well. And it can lead to more win-lose thinking and feeling no one understands me, and then both look for evidence to validate their perception. And if you look for it, you usually can find it one way or another, even if you misinterpret the motives of another, because our tendency is to judge others by their behavior, ourselves by our intentions. So when we see someone's behavior and we suspect what our intention might be on that behavior, we supply it. And then the net effect is it creates a kind of collusion or a negative energy cycle that feeds upon itself, and the relationship begins to deteriorate. And then they don't synergize. Habit 6 is the habit of creating something together that bonds us. Habit 6, synergize, means that the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, that literally the strength of our marriage, the strength of our relationship in this team or in this business or in this school is the fact that we are different, that we think differently, that we see it differently. But can you imagine the amount of personal security it would take to truly deepen our hearts, not have prejudice, not prejudge, to discover our wife again today, freshly, newly, as if we had never seen her before, to experience our husband on the basis of the experience of today, to experience the son or child or the boss, and not to have to carry the label of yesterday, to not to have to live out of our memory, but to live with imagination, with the potential of what other people have inside them, to live on the basis of what you might call true faith in the potential of other people, and to see in that faith hope for the future, and to have the spirit of charity that follows, so that you are not jumping upon them and looking for evidence to, say, undermine them or to validate some earlier prejudice. So in a sense, habit 4 is the fruit of the first 3 habits, but it is the root of 5 and 6. That is, it is like the tree that has its roots deep into the soil of mutual benefit, of trust, of abundance, of a desire for really valuing other people as you value yourself. Then the natural route to take, like a road, is habit 5. We need to communicate. We need to understand each other, but always to understand the other first. Not to judge, but to understand. It's very interesting that judgment and understanding are almost inimical concepts. Literally, you cannot judge when you understand at the same time. They're mutually exclusive emotions, literally. And it's very ironic. Those who do not judge will not be judged. They will not be judged. They'll find that they'll create an aura around them and a culture around them that is non-judgmental. Why? Because they are so accepting. They notice. They observe. They don't judge. And they seek to understand without judgment. They don't agree or disagree. They're not into sympathy. Empathy is not sympathy. They observe, they notice, they understand, but then they also want to be understood. And out of that interaction flow new insights, new awarenesses that neither of them had before. And if they truly understand each other's deeper needs and interests and concerns, usually the creative right brain enables them to come up with solutions that are truly synergistic. So habit 6 becomes the fruit of 4 and 5. Habit 7 is the habit of continuous renewal. It's the habit we call sharpen the saw. Ineffective people really do not pay the price of sharpening the saw. They fall into what's called entropy. They fall back, they get disordered, they lose their interest and their energy. They're psyched when they get into this material for a few days or something of this nature, but then after a while, it's washed away. And then they've learned only new things to condemn themselves by, because they do not maintain the habit of renewal, the habit of balance, the habit of sharpening the saw, the habit of continuous improvement, the habit of Kaizen, the Japanese word for continuous improvement. It's the one habit that essentially nurtures and maintains and enhances the other six.